Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for holding. Welcome to the Pacific Vision conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Instructions will be provided at that time. If any participant require assistance at any time, please press the star followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. I will now hand the conference over to Mr. Andrew Burnham. Thank you, sir. Please go ahead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for calling in this morning. You will have seen last night that we made a voluntary announcement in relation to our Ro-Ro business and confirmed that we expect there to be a non-cash impairment charge of $190 million, which will be reflected in the half-year results to the 30th of June 2012. What I would like to do is to go through the announcements and give you a little bit more background and color on that, and then at the end of my presentation to invite you to ask questions. Clearly, the first question in your mind is probably, well, what has happened to the Ro-Ro sector? As we have stated, a very high proportion of the global Ro-Ro fleet operates in the European market, and the protracted debt crisis and continued macroeconomic and political uncertainties are significantly delaying the prospects of a recovering demand and the possibility of new Ro-Ro routes opening up. As a result, operators' demand for long, medium, and short-term charters of Ro-Ro vessels have significantly reduced in the past few months. This problem is really exacerbated by the inflow of new buildings, not unique to the Ro-Ro sector, but certainly for the larger Ro-Ro vessels which we operate, the vessels which are over the 2,700 lane meter capacity, this is particularly true. This is evident from the growing number of vessels which are idling globally, of which there are probably now around nine to 10 of our larger vessels which are idle, including the two vessels which we have laid up at the moment. As you know, our two 3,700 lane meter vessels have laid up in the United Kingdom at the current time. We announced, obviously, our annual results in April and made first quarter announcements, and there was no hint of a Ro-Ro impairment at that time. Clearly, something has changed in that interim period. As mentioned, the European market is probably the key catalyst here, which has caused us to reconsider the prospects of the future likely earnings from our six Ro-Ro vessels, and that has had a consequential impact on the vessels' valuations. Recent fixtures in the last few months, including fixtures in May and June, have been for shorter periods than the market had hoped for and at lower euro rates than we had originally expected to see fixed in the market. That, in combination, to say, with the weak political and macroeconomic situation in Europe, has brought us down in our expected earnings. You're aware that we have made an impairment charge of $80 million in the middle of 2011. At that time, we had anticipated a slow but gradual recovery in Ro-Ro earnings, really going back to the pre-financial crisis levels for earnings in 2008. Whilst we held that view at the time of our annual results announcement, and indeed at the time of the first quarter trading update, given these European market conditions, we have downgraded the Ro-Ro earnings outlook and now expect a much flatter recovery in those charter rates to rates which really are not expected to exceed roughly 75% of that 2008 peak. Market values of vessels are clearly also important when establishing the amount of impairment, and the values of Ro-Ro vessels really have become increasingly difficult to judge in past months. There have been no comparable sales of vessels since November 2009, and talking to brokers, quite often we hear the term that the sale and purchase market really has become dysfunctional. So that does not give us a useful guide to be able to effectively cross-check where we think the net present value of future cash flows could come out. So we've had a difficult judgment to take at the board level, but we have made our best estimate at the current time, and that has resulted in this $190 million impairment charge. In calculating the impairment, we have said use the discounted present value of the cash flows as the key level in terms of coming up with the guidance. The result of the impairment will be to reduce the daily depreciation, because the impairment effectively, you could say, represents an accelerated depreciation. So going forward, the daily depreciation for RoRo vessels will be halved down to around $3,000 per day. That means an aggregate reduction in depreciation charges of about $6.6 million a year. Now, in terms of the daily charge or daily cost of our vessels, daily P&L cost of our vessels going forward, that stands at a range between about $11,100 per day and about $15,800 per day. Now, that includes operating expenses, depreciation, the allocated finance costs, and direct overheads. Now, the range is a function of whether a vessel is in layup or whether it is operating, and clearly, where we get to at the end of the year will be a function of how successful we have been in finding employment for the vessels. In terms of strategy for the RoRos, the board recognizes that the original premise for diversifying into this RoRo sector as a tonnage provider is no longer compelling. Since we do not have our own route network to fall back on for the employment of RoRos, we're at the moment fully exposed to this current period of severe weakness in the European RoRo sector. So as a consequence of this reassessment of the prospects for our RoRo business, we no longer regard the RoRo shipping to be a core activity of the Pacific Basin Group. As mentioned, the sale and purchase market is in many ways dysfunctional, and therefore an exit out of this segment in the near term is an unrealistic expectation. So what we'll be looking to do is to manage this RoRo investment and exit from the sector in an economically rational manner that realizes the maximum possible value for the shareholders over the medium term. Now, as you can appreciate, this will take some time and patience, and it may also require some investments in initiatives and ventures to unlock the trading opportunities for our RoRos until we can actually find an appropriate opportunity to be able to exit the investment on acceptable terms. On that, I'd like to stop now and invite you to ask questions. Emily, on that process?
Yep. Maybe operators please have to arrange the Q&A session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press star followed by the 2. If you are using loudspeaker equipment today, please leave the handset before making your selection. Your questions will be answered in the order they are received. One moment, please, for the first question. The first questions come from Andy Mann from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for your conference call and the briefing. So basically, two questions from my side. The first question is, what's the initial CapEx for the RoRo team? I just want to get a sense how much you have already written off for the RoRo freight team. I think adding those numbers together, we have already written off around US dollar like $300 million. So just want to get a rough sense how much do we left on the balance sheet. Second question is in terms of the loss making profit in the first half. I think with this like a one-time write-off, definitely will be loss-making. But what if we exclude this portion? What will be the operation status for the rest of business? Will be profit-making or will be loss-making? Just a rough sense will be fine. So that's my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So in relation to the RoRo investments, then the total investment in the six vessels in US dollars equivalent stands at around $530 million US dollars. In terms of the impairments, we have now made three impairments in total. So $25 million US dollars in 2009, $80 million in the middle of last year, and now the $190 million, which comes to $295 million. So the total impairments to date represent about a 45% write-off of the original investment cost. And, you know, on a pro forma basis, one can expect the carrying value to be in the region of $180 million US dollars at the interim. In relation to the second question about the performance of the rest of the group, as you'll appreciate, this is a voluntary announcement in relation to the specific item of the $190 million of impairment, which is something which we do not anticipate the market is expecting. In terms of the first half performance, we will be commenting on that in detail on the 1st of August. What we have commented on in the results announcement here is that for the dry bulk business, that sector as a whole still is suffering from excess ship supply. Spot earnings remain depressed as we're in the summer months. Funding for the industry overall continues to challenge many ship owners, and a number of those ship owners are facing, you know, pretty severe issues in terms of cash and challenges in terms of corporate earnings. As you know, and as we have reiterated, our business model for operating Handysize and Handymax vessels does benefit from the strong cargo and customer support which we have. But in terms of, you know, specific performance, I'm afraid we can't really talk about that specifically.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next questions come from Ringan Wong from Citigroup. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks. I have three questions. The first question is on the amount of impairment charge, which is $190 million US dollars. And based on your announcement, this is equivalent to around a $6,000 decrease in daily vessel earnings assumptions. Would you be able to quantify the change in the spot charter rates between your first quarter 2012 trading update on the 18th of April and yesterday's announcement? So that's the first question. Second question is on the reclassification of the RoRo business to a non-core business. Would the company reconsider reclassifying this as a core business again in the future, and what would prompt the company to do so? And my third question is on the overall diversification strategy of both the towage and the RoRo businesses. So the towage business is quite profitable, but the RoRo business is unprofitable and now considered a non-core. So does this change the way you think about towage as a core business of Pacific Basin? And does this also change the way you think about diversification given the mixed results of both businesses?
Thank you for that. In terms of the impairment, yes, you're correct in that the sensitivity we've given, well, let me explain. The reason we put that sensitivity in there in relation to a $1,000 equivalent change in the underlying assumption having an impact of plus or minus $30 million on the amount of the impairment charge. What we want you to understand is that you know, coming up with this judgment of the $190 million, it's not easy. And relatively small changes in underlying earnings assumptions can have you know, reasonably meaningful impact in the amount of the impairment, particularly as, you know, as you will appreciate, one has to look at the earnings over the economic life of the vessel. And technically, you're right in that this represents effectively a $6,000 reduction in the underlying earnings. Now, in terms of the structure of it, the guidance that we've given is that the peak earnings rates are basically about 25% down from where they were in 2008. And that actually is roughly the number that you're talking about. In terms of the detailed structure, I don't actually think it's particularly useful to give you a breakdown year by year, not because we're trying to be obscure, but because, you know, you can have a different set of numbers that will give you the same effective impairment value at the end of the day. The important thing here is that the board has given a substantial amount of thought over this process, and our view is that the $190 million it really is a pretty fair and best estimate that we can derive today based on what we're seeing in terms of the lack of demand out of the European market and our expectation of a pretty slow recovery due to the general uncertainties that Europe is facing at the current time and is likely to face for the medium term. In relation to a reclassification of RoRo, stating whether something is core and non-core is not something that we would be expecting to, you know, adjust on an annual or every two-year basis. And I think our view is very much that the team and the group's expertise lies within the minor dry bulk sector, where we have what we believe is proven expertise and a demonstrated success record in, and we believe internally that that is where our emphasis should be focused. So I think it is extremely unlikely that we would ever be looking to reclassify this as being part of the core business. What we have said is that getting out of the business will take time. So what we're not saying is that this is, you know, these ships are current assets to be held on the balance sheet with a view to dispose of them as soon as possible. What we are saying is that to maximize the value, we need to still continue to work hard on these vessels, and it's something we, you know, that aspect hasn't changed. But to be able to realize the value in these, that is going to take a bit of time and quite a bit of effort. In terms of, and that really bridges into diversification. So, you know, from our perspective, you know, just to remind everybody, the reason we diversified back in 2008 was the anticipation, the correct anticipation, that the dry bulk cycle was going to head in a significant down phase on the back of dramatic oversupply of dry bulk vessels having been ordered in those 2 to 3 years running up to the, as it turned out, the global financial crisis. That led the board to conclude that having cash flows from one or two businesses that were not tied in with the returns out of the BDI would help the company to survive any prolonged and dramatically weak dry bulk business. You're right in that the towage segment is actually doing very well, and we most definitely do reaffirm that we are committed to our towage business, and again reaffirm that that is performing well and in line with our expectations. In terms of diversification overall, again to reiterate, the board has discussed this as a subject, and we have concluded that our strength and specialism lies in the minor bulk sector, and therefore for dry bulk this is the area we should be focusing on. So this is where the majority of our investment will go in. I think, as I've mentioned before, you know, in terms of towage business, if we can find opportunities to invest, if we can find projects rather I should say, to that need investment, then we would look to continue to support that segment, which we do remain committed to. Thank you.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on the telephone. The next question comes from Karen Chen from RCM. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello.
Morning.
Hi, morning. I have two questions. The first question is, now do you see this is the last impairment charges on the RORO, or you, if the market continues to be in this situation or even worsen, is it possible to have further impairment? Second question is on dry bulk. If we expect like the slow global demand continue to be very slow, and do you expect any downside on the dry bulk as well, and you will need another impairment losses or charges on the dry bulk segment?
Thank you. The last impairment, well, we said last year we didn't anticipate that there would be a further impairment based on the then current market circumstances. You know, impairment at the end of the day comes down to, in theory, you know, what the market's able to justify the vessel's earning, and that's a factor which has changed considerably. We can all see that Europe is in a pretty poor state, and we all and hope that on the recent news of, you know, some positive movements on the Greek election, that, you know, Europe will manage to sort out its problems over the next period of time, which is more like the medium period of time, and be able to grow. I think it's clear that for our RORO vessels to secure consistent and increasing employment rates, we need to see a period of sustained confidence from which European consumers and the economy can start to build, which will enable the operators of RORO ships to have the confidence to look to expand both their routes and expand their fleet size. At the moment, those factors are lacking. Now, clearly, we believe that we've factored in that weakness into our projections. What we did mention is that, you know, this dysfunctional sale and purchase market only acts as an additional complication on trying to, you know, ascertain what appropriate values are, because the lack of sale and purchase market is indicating that others are really standing back and suggesting they don't have a clear view themselves on how the market is developing. So we believe that we have made the right amount of impairment at the current time, but I can't guarantee that there won't be another impairment. What I can say is, under the accounting standards, that to make an impairment, there needs to be a change in the factors around the impairment. So the factors I suggested before, that there isn't really a sale and purchase market. You could come up with a hypothetical situation that somebody sells a ship at a deeply distressed value in the market, and a fair question would be whether that in itself would trigger an additional impairment. Provided our views on the expected cash flows haven't changed, the future earnings haven't changed, then that event of effectively a distressed sale of a vessel in the market would not in itself generate an additional impairment charge. In terms of your second question, dry bulk demand, yeah, I mean, as we commented in this announcement, you know, yes, the dry bulk sector overall is still having a difficult time right now. Clearly, in terms of announcing this impairment, we have gone through the process of looking at our other vessels, the other segments, both dry bulk and towage, to establish whether there would be likely to be an impairment in those two segments. So you can see that the fact that there is no announcement in relation to dry bulk or towage here would suggest that we do not see circumstances which will generate an impairment at the current time. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jonathan Leung from Jefferies. Please go ahead with your question.
Hey, Andrew. Jonathan here. Thanks for the call. Hey, sir, I just want to ask, what's the lesson learned for the companies? Does the company learn anything from this robo investment ventures that it can use in the future decision for any other investment opportunities?
Lessons to be learned. Yeah, I mean, there's always lessons to be learned, and one always should be learning from what one's actions are. The board most definitely did embark on a diversification strategy for what we believe were absolutely the right reasons, and we don't shy away from that. The question is, you know, how that diversification has been executed. So I think, you know, what we have done yesterday making this announcement is recognize that, you know, to be able to make a successful diversification, you need to have some competitive advantage and some sort of an expertise that can allow you to produce a strong performance. Now, within dry bulk, we have, over many years, been generating that return, that above-market return, through the business model that we employ for engaging our ships in the market. So I think the single key lesson that we've learned is that our expertise and our specialism is really in operating dry bulk ships. That is where our core strength lies.
Yeah, it seems like for dry bulk it works because you guys operate it, but as a pure tonnage provider, so then you kind of lose the edge for ro-ros. So we could we basically make the assumption that the pet basin won't get into the sector where it may just be a pure tonnage provider in the future.
I mean that's a fair conclusion. What we're reiterating here is that, you know, what we're good at is operating Handysize and Handymax ships using our business model and anticipating changes in the market. That is absolutely our strength, and any company should play to its strength.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Calvin Koo from East Spring Investment. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, morning. Thanks for organizing the call. Wonder if it's worth finding what the scrap value for the ro-ros are, just to help us understand what the flaw, if things really turn out as bad as it, you know, everybody worries it could be. I know in past shipping cycles, shipping operators have scrapped new vessels, even though it's 3 to 4 years old. So just help us frame the worst-case scenario for the rural business.
Yeah. My recollection is that scrap values per vessel are in the region of about $3 to $4 million per vessel. But obviously, as you know, scrap values are a function of the lightweight in the vessel, and a function of the demand for scrap steel, which, you know, is a market-driven factor. Yeah. But, you know, we're not anticipating that being an exit route.
I understand. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next questions come from Corinne Ng from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Good morning, Andrew and Emily. I have one question on your dividend policy. You basically target to pay out a minimum of 50% of profits, excluding vessel disposal gains, for example. So does this non-cash impairment charge therefore have any impact at all on your dividend policy for this year?
Well, the dividend policy, you know, stands as is. One would conclude that based on the dividend policy, then it would be unlikely that a dividend would be paid. The dividend policy, though, is to pay out a minimum. It's not to say that we would pay out the precise amount. As you saw last year, the payout ratio was a much higher portion. And at the moment, you know, we have not, as a board, considers the amount of dividends that may or be not paid during the course of the year, so it wouldn't be appropriate to comment on that. other than to say that the dividend policy is as stands, and that the board, you know, does have the discretion to make dividend payments if it feels that the underlying cash flows and operations of the company warrant that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone.
If there's no more further questions, then actually we will close the conference call right now. We have another session which is the same contents in this evening. So if you want to talk about or you want to raise a question again, so you can draw the 5 p.m. one. Okay, bye. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes the Pacific Brisbane Conference Call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.